This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Richard Wollstonecroft. He is back to discuss the new Twin Peaks. Richard, great having you back on.
Yep, no trouble, boys. How's everything over in... You're both over in America, are you? How's everything over there?
Everything is great over here. We're both in California, just in separate cities that are like about... 2 or 3 hours away. I live in Pasadena. He lives in Santa Barbara.
Ah, fair enough. It's lovely over there, isn't it? It's been very hot, apparently.
Oh, and yeah, it's been, like, crazy hot out here.
Have you been enjoying the Trump presidency? That's been going rather well.
Yeah, I think. it's pretty entertaining.
But the lying media, they've been going out of control, haven't they? Oh, this Russian conspiracy, it's gotten so old, and they can't even see it. Even many left-wingers don't even believe it anymore. They're like, give it a rest, will you? You know, like, find something decent to go on. And they still think they're going to impeach him on this fucking piece of fake news and one stupid, flimsy document from some part of the CIA. It's been cucked out. It's ridiculous.
This is Sam Kevorkian, by the way.
Yes.
But to yes, kind Sam.
Of start things off, where we left off, Richard, I think it may have been around episode 7 where we last left off in our last show. And yes. What we were discussing is we came to the conclusion, our prediction was that the Twin Peaks, the first one ended up in the Black Lodge. We were speculating that this would be a journey to the White Lodge. But so far, we're at the point where... Gordon, David Lynch's character, is investigating. He's beginning to kind of discover the secrets of the Black Lodge, and they decide to open up a Blue Rose case, this case that's been around back in the 60s about the supernatural. Yes. That's kind of where they are now, and then you have all these side stories with these other characters.
Yes, I think the storyline, we've probably seen another 6 or 7 episodes from the last podcast that we did with you. It's taken a new direction. I thought that Dougie Jones would have waken up by now and that Dale Cooper would have returned to normal and been involved in the investigation. But that hasn't happened. Dougie Jones could well be here to stay right to the end. I mean, he must change in the last 2 episodes.
Because I think we're more than halfway through, like at least 2/3.
Yeah, we have only 5 or 6 hours left to go, and I would have put my money on Dougie Jones awakening by now. But no, it seems that David Lynch intends that Kyle MacLachlan spend the majority of Twin Peaks season 3 as a kind of retard. Dougie Jones is funny. I mean, I got to admit it. It's funny. The storyline is kind of cute. Dougie Jones is clearly a kind of good character in a way, someone who represents kind of goodness and the good things happen to him, and there are very, very kind of amusing stories. I mean, and that's the whole thing that surprised me most about the new Twin Peaks is the humor. He's taking a whole new direction with season 3, and I guess that's his right to do that. I mean, I personally don't think it's as good as season 1, obviously, which had a strong crime narrative. It's just interesting. I mean, you know, I've just had to go with it. Sometimes I've complained about the new Twin Peaks, but generally I've gone with it. I've gone along with it. I think that in recent episodes, it's returned to a more there's more actual stuff in Twin Peaks because a lot of the show up until about episode 7, not a lot of it had even taken place in Twin Peaks, which I thought was very strange. But it's began.
Yeah,
to become...
and the original characters were mere side notes. Now you're actually getting into the stories of the original characters and some of these new characters that are coming along. I think one of them there was Ben Horn's grandson who was involved in this hit and run, and he's like a fugitive now. There's that whole story.
Yeah, I would like to start the Richard Horn fan club. I think it will be a very small fan club, but I'm a fan of that character. I think he's it's played by an Australian.
Oh, the crazy, you're talking about the crazy brother with the big beard.
No, I'm talking about Richard Horn. I'm talking about the guy who ran the kid over.
Oh, the grandson, right.
Yeah, I think he's totally evil, but I like evil characters, so I think he's a great character. I think he is fantastic. He's played by an Australian actor. I can't remember the actor's name, but you can Google it, Richard Horn. He's an Australian actor. He's worked with a couple of director friends of mine, like Chris Stenders in Australia. And, yeah, I mean, I think he's really excellent. He looks he's very handsome, and he's just got that, you know, that mean good looks of, like, the original Bobby Briggs. And I think that's the kind of part he's playing to some extent.
With Bobby Briggs, it's interesting, is, like, you would expect him to be, like, this crooked, like, asshole cop, but his character is actually fairly kind of mellow, laid back, and really likable. He's not what you would expect.
You know, Mike Briggs is playing.
There's that secret note that his widow gave to the sheriff that says they have to go to this specific location at a specific time.
Yes.
And they haven't reached that point yet.
No. I mean, they've, you know, but it's clear that Major Briggs, you know, Major Briggs, his body is discovered. You know, there is a murder mystery in this series. You know, obviously in the first series, there was the murder mystery of Laura Palmer. There is the... is it Davenport? I can't remember the girl's first name. There's the Davenport corpse. There's like a man's body is found, and then a woman's head. It's Major Briggs at the age of 45 when he disappeared. So Major Briggs is playing an important part in this show, you know, in his absence. Obviously, the actor who played Major Briggs has passed on, so they can't bring him back. But he is playing an important part, and I think the fact that Major Briggs was a symbol of good, and so was his wife, you know, and it was what we're talking about before, the traditional, the male authoritarian father and the female supportive mother, and they were both symbols of good. And then the son was obviously rebelling against the father to some extent. Bobby Briggs was the wild boy, but like most people, they calm down and become conservative. When they reach the age that I'm at, an age that maybe, I don't know what you, how old you guys are, but in your mid-40s, you certainly become more conservative just by nature. And, you know, and it plays along that famous Winston Churchill quote, which is, you know, when you're young, if you're not... you know, if you're not, what's it called, or left wing or whatever the left wing was, you know, progressive, you have no heart. And if you are not conservative by the time you're middle age, you have no brain. Which is, I think, a good quote. But anyway, so it plays along that theme, and that Bobby has become, yeah, a legitimate policeman, not a corrupt one. And that he's someone who is actually out to try and help crime. And you can see he has a wild daughter in the form of Shelley's daughter, which has been revealed, and I think that's one of the better storylines. What do you guys think of that?
It's interesting how he plays on that. The side characters are very minor, and there's this gradual build-up, and I agree with you. Lynch always avoids giving people what they want to see, so likely we can never see Agent Cooper recover as a Dougie Jones. The whole story with Dougie Jones is fascinating because he's completely dumb in the sense that he's unaware of his surroundings.
Yes.
And then they discover that there's no record of him prior to a certain date. And then there's this whole, like, a planned assassination of him. There was the deal with the insurance scandal with the casino owners. But then it turns out that he actually helped the casino. And then there's some secretive individual who's still trying to get him murdered. But that's separate from the casino brothers.
Well, the Mitchell brothers.
The Mitchell brothers.
I think they're fantastic. I think, obviously, is it Steve Buscemi? Not Steve Buscemi, sorry. The brother
Robert
of the
Knepper?
Guy. No, the guy who died. What's his name? Belushi.
Oh, right.
Is it John Belushi? Anyway, I think they're both excellent. And I think they play a kind of character like Mr. Eddie, you know, like these gangsters are out to kill Dougie to begin with, and then when Dougie delivers the check for $30 million, they become, you know, his best friend. And I think that's actually what gangsters are like, that if you are taking money away from them, they want to kill you, but if you are actually bringing them a whole bunch of money and that, you know, whatever scam they are involved in suddenly works for them, they become your best friend. And that's exactly what these people are like. And if you have done the right thing by a gangster, they become your best friend and will protect you and shower you in gifts and honestly be your best friend for at least until they get sick of being your best friend. So I think it was a very interesting storyline. And then
there's also the gangsters that are affiliated with Richard Horn. And I think they're the same ones that are in the very final episode, in this most recent episode, they've got a Cooper's doppelganger, and he wins at arm wrestling against them. and he ends up killing one of their guys. But there's that whole story, so they have some awareness of Cooper as well.
Yes, I think so. Look, I do think Dougie Jones will have to wake the character up before the end of the, you know. I mean, obviously he's holding off to the last minute because in the sense that when he does change from Dougie Jones back to Cooper, obviously the thing will then race towards its conclusion. So I guess it will probably happen in the last two or three episodes. And if it doesn't happen at all, I have no idea what's going on then. But, you know, I mean, it certainly is a bit different, this series, to say the least. But, you know, I mean, I think it's very – we're lucky, for one, that we're getting it. You know what I mean?
There was episode 8, which was the one that was all black and white, and a lot of footage of there's footage of New Mexico from the first atomic bomb being detonated in 1945. And then there was that scene of that man in the convenience store asking for a light and then murdering people.
Well, that's the most-
and that basically represents Bob. I know that episode got a mixed review. Some people said it was brilliant, a brilliant art piece. And some people were saying it was kind of Lynch overindulging, that it had no plot.
It was a little bit of that as well. It was a bit of, it's a bit of both, I think. But
yeah,
like,
I think they're both arguments are right. I think it was... I think it was a piece of art, and it tells you a lot of imagery of kind of the whole, like, Black Lodge aspect. But at the same time, part of you, I mean, if you're watching a show, you do have, like, a limited time frame, and you are kind of craving a plot, so you have to sit for this long hour without a plot. So I think, in a sense, but it does expose a lot, some secretive elements. So I think they're both those arguments have some validity.
Yeah, I do think so, but like I do think in retrospect that's clearly almost the most amazing episode of the show. It was stunning. It was bizarre and it was kind of haunting. The whole "this is the water, this is the well, the horse is the white of the eye, drink dark and descend." That kind of thing that repeats like a kind of spooky mantra that seems to put a small American town to sleep. And then this weird kind of insect crawls out of the desert and into a small girl's mouth. That whole thing was incredibly creepy. That was Lynch at the height of his kind of, you know, delving into the dark side of evil, which obviously a lot of his work does. I mean, you know, when you hear him, I think I brought this up last podcast as well, you know, the side of David Lynch that deals with goodness, that deals with even like surrealism, is reasonably well explained. But the side of him that deals with evil, which is really vast, is somehow mysterious. He never really talks about his interest in evil and where it comes from and all this stuff. So I guess, you know, I guess evil is to a certain extent. What's the word I'm looking for? Almost obtuse, or where it comes from is very difficult to maybe say.
With the whole New Mexico town, it could be a predecessor to Twin Peaks. Because there are these multiple portals to the Black Lodge. There's the one in Twin Peaks at Glastonbury Grove. There's the one in New York and the skyscraper and the glass box. So that possible that the New Mexico place had a portal to the Black Lodge and had a story similar to Twin Peaks. That could be.
Yeah, I think there is that kind of a weird the place where they go through the fence. I thought that was a really good episode too. They go through the fence and there's like a deserted kind of like house, and it was where the guy had seen Major Briggs appear. And then there's one of those men in black, you know, they're like homeless men with black faces. That character was also in Mulholland Drive as a kind of representation of evil.
I forget the actor's name, but he's in the coffee shop and he's talking about that weird vision he saw in the parking lot behind it, and he's all traumatized.
Yeah, and they go out the back and it's a homeless man with a black face. That is that character is in the new Twin Peaks and also is taken on the form of a kind of Bob character, has taken on the form of you know, he was also like the same kind of man who delivered that speech, "This is the water, this is the well." And they're credited in the credits as the Woodsman. And the Woodsman is also credited in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. When Bob and the little dwarf has accused Lynch of being a pedophile. And
he's basically, his ideology, he's going on these political rants. He's like basically like a, a nationalist and a socialist, in a sense. Have you read his political stuff on his page?
The Dwarf, yeah. He's also an alt-writer, a 1488 alt-writer, and he's accused Lynch of various sex crimes and also murdering people in a kind of roundabout way. Obviously, he didn't. He said, you know, Lynch did not do this, but I think the implication is that he did. Look, I have no idea what to make that. That this could be him, you know, being very upset that he wasn't going to be cast in the new show, and you know, a lot of bad blood maybe has gone on between them. I'm not exactly sure, but
I know Sherilyn Fenn also said some negative comments about David Lynch right before the show was going to air, but then she was kind of brought on in the last minute to play Audrey Horn.
Oh, really? What happened? Tell me about those. I haven't heard Sherilyn Fenn comment. Well, you know, I mean, Sherilyn Fenn's character has been, you know, I mean, she's a really bright character.
She said that...
I mean, Lynch has a strange propensity to punish people. You know, for example, he had a falling out with Kyle MacLachlan. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but he had a falling out with Kyle MacLachlan around the time of Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. I think that Dal Cooper had a problem that Dal Cooper was not in much of Fire Walk With Me, and that they had a falling out over that. And that maybe the fact that he spent the whole season as basically a retard, you know, is the way that David Lynch pays him back. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've noticed him do that with people, you know, that he, you know, he expects a kind of loyalty, I think, when you work with him, you know, like a loyalty, like, you know, like almost like gangster's loyalty. And, you know, like if you're very loyal, you never say anything bad about him in public, you know, he'll work with you and you know, blah, blah, blah. But if you've ever questioned anything about him or you know, said he's a bit dodgy in some way, you know, he will banish you, or if he does work with you again, he'll punish you in some way. And that, you know, Sherilyn Fenn's character in the new show, you know, she's married to this weird little dwarf, which is, again, almost like a character like the Michael Anderson character who he hates.
I don't think that character was referenced in the previous show. You have no idea who this guy is.
Who are you talking about?
Her, Audrey Horn's new husband.
Oh, yeah, but, like, Audrey Horn was, like, hot. She's not so hot. Idea that she would marry a dwarf? Give me a fucking break. She would have married Bobby Briggs. She would have married at least some one of the better-looking guys. The idea that she's getting married to that dwarf is utterly ridiculous. And this is Lynch punishing her for obviously making some statement. Originally, she was going to be in the Mulholland Drive. She was originally the main character.
Originally, Mulholland Drive was meant as a Twin Peaks spinoff where, based on Audrey Horn. So yeah,
Lynch is fucking all these women too. Let's be honest. Definitely when he was younger. Anyway, he's been screwing all these actresses over the years, and you know, there's a lot of personal, you know, bullshit involved in what's going on between him and probably Sherilyn Fenn and probably the woman who played Laura Palmer. You know, these women definitely would have slept with David Lynch, and. You know, so there's a lot of personal stuff going on there. You know what it's like with personal relationships. Sometimes you're friends after you've, you know, been in a relationship with somebody, or sometimes you're not. So, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff obviously going on. And anyway, look, you know, he's got his network of women, and it's been causing all kinds of trouble, no doubt. So, I mean, whatever he wants to do, I guess, you know, he has a right to do.
Yeah, even in the new show, you see him with that French woman at his... at the hotel.
Yeah, he's a notorious womanizer. I've known people who've, you know, I won't go into details. But anyway, you know, good luck to him. You know, I mean, it's every man's right to do that if they're an alpha, red-blooded alpha male. But I do think it's interesting. The weird thing is Gordon Cole, the character played by David Lynch, has become almost the role of Cooper. He's become the main almost narrative thing that drives the narrative. But I do think the thing that is disappointing in the new show is that there is a murder mystery going on. There is all this weird stuff going on, but it's not really in Twin Peaks. It's happening outside of Twin Peaks. And I have no idea why it couldn't have happened in Twin Peaks.
I don't think it's necessary for everything to happen within Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is a town that kind of, where things get started, then it all spreads around. The original show was about the whole mystery of the Black Lodge, but it was also about the town of Twin Peaks. This is kind of, there's something kind of greater out there. And the first show I did on the new Twin Peaks with, the show I did with Jay Dyer, our prediction was that the new series would primarily be about the deep state investigating the powers of the Black Lodge. And I think that prediction was proven right, because that's where we are now, where the FBI reopens the Blue Lodge case, and there's a Blue Lodge, no, Blue Rose, there's the Blue Rose case and the Blue Rose task force to investigate all this stuff. And I think David Lynch's character, who's sort of in a sense becoming a new Cooper, I think his character is sort of implied that he's had an awareness of the Black Lodge basically since Cooper, as long as Cooper did.
There's been a lot of kind of explication of the storyline of the Black Lodge in the latest, say, 6 or 7 episodes since we last did the last podcast. So this is kind of part two of, our, I guess, our three-part coverage of Twin Peaks. Obviously that has become a very important narrative part of the new Twin Peaks. The whole Philip Jeffries mystery, the Blue Rose, this came up in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me and is now being further explored in the new series. Philip Jeffries appears to be exploring the Blue Rose case. And there's also, he appears to be an enemy of the Bag Cooper. For example, in the latest episodes, we discovered that he's the one who's been trying to kill the Bag Cooper. And obviously, there was that very interesting episode where the Bag Cooper was killed. He was shot by Ray, who's actually a pretty good character as well. And then these weird homeless men with the black faces come out and save him. They kind of like, clearly the forces of evil came to his rescue and somehow removed the bullet from his chest and brought him back to life. And that was a very interesting episode, I thought.
Well, Ray was the one that reveals that, Jeffrey ordered Cooper's doppelganger dead. And that's the scene right before he kills him. But basically, there was a whole conspiracy where the prison warden was bribed or blackmailed into releasing the doppelganger. He was bribed, and the warden was murdered after that to basically as a cover up. So there is some kind of a powerful secretive force that's behind all this, but that hasn't been exposed yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if David Bowie is going to turn up. Like, these scripts have clearly been around 4 or 5 years. And obviously, David Bowie was dying. David Bowie died, at the end of 2014 or 15? I can't remember. But I do think that Lynch would have known that Philip Jeffries was going to be in the show. So, obviously, he probably wasn't able to do much because he wasn't able to shoot during the main body. But they may have done what they did with Catherine Coulson, who was also dying, as this new show is being made. They quickly went and got some scenes with her before she passed on. And I do think maybe David Bowie will turn up. Maybe they'll get one scene of him. He's meant to be, I don't know where the hell he's meant to be, in Rio de Janeiro or somewhere like that. I think Cooper is trying to kill Philip Jeffries now. So maybe David Bowie will turn up and they have somehow worked out how to do that scene. Or maybe they missed him and they weren't able to do it in time. We don't know. But I do think it's a fascinating kind of web.
Yeah, then there's also the thing where the doppelganger Cooper wants to now has the coordinates to go to that specific location at the time and place. So maybe they'll both meet up with Sheriff Truman and Hawk and Bobby Briggs at the same time in Twin Peaks.
There's your showdown. You know, obviously, I do think that, I mean, Cooper will have to snap out of it, and then he will probably hook up with Gordon Cole, and they're all going to be there at the big showdown. You know, that could be the end of it, I don't know. But with David Lynch, of course, nothing is sure. Have we lost our fellow interlocker? Is he gone, is he?
No, I'm still here. I'm just listening and recording.
Go on. Give us your opinions. Give us your opinions.
On the show?
Yes.
I haven't watched it, and I haven't been paying attention to the conversation, but I'll check it out.
Fair enough. All right. If you're not listening, don't worry about it. Go ahead, Robert. Go ahead.
And then, there's all these characters coming back. The ending of the most recent episode is with the character James performing at the Roadhouse.
Yes, the Roadhouse sequences are unusual too. I do like the way he ends in these musical tracks. Some of the music is quite good. I've often, every time there's a new musician that I'm not aware of, and it's quite often I'm not aware of them, I tend to look it up online and look at these
I think what was banned? What's it called? Au Revoir.
And then there was the Chromatics.
Chromatics, I am aware of, but I didn't. I think they've got some new albums coming out, or a new album, or stuff coming out soon. So I'm going to have a look into that. And
do you think the song that James performs is by Angelo Badalamenti?
I had heard that song before. That could be from Blue Bob, or it could be from another project that David Lynch has done. But I'd heard that song before, and I actually think it's from the original series. Actually, You and I. I think he sings it to Laura. I think at one stage. He sings that song. Yeah, he does, actually, in the original show. I can't remember if it's season one or two.
But Laura's cousin?
Yeah, that's right. He sings it to her, I think. That's right, yeah, in the original show. So I think that's obviously another reference. It was rumored that Leland Palmer and Laura Palmer were both going to be in it, but there's only been those original shots of them in the Black Lodge. Obviously, I guess because they are dead, they can't be in it that much. But there's a lot of weird stuff that's been going on at the Double R. Like, there was a woman with the rash, you know, she's scratching herself.
Oh, the Roadhouse, not the Double R.
Oh, I mean the Roadhouse. There's been a lot of weird scenes going on at the Roadhouse where, yeah, there's that woman who had the rash. And then there's the other, in the last episode.
I thought the rash was just from, like, a drug addiction withdrawal.
Well, I think so. I think so. And the other thing was, there was Scott Coffey, who's a well-known Lynch collaborator. He's often been involved in Lynch's projects the last 20 years. He turned up as a character called Trick and was hanging out with these women. I knew he was in it, and I was wondering when he was going to turn up, but, like, is that it? Like, he just turns up and he delivers, like, 2-3 lines that have nothing to do with anybody else or anything, and that's it. I mean, it's all so weird. There's a kind of tangentiality to a lot of stuff. And I've also noticed this weird kind of, sometimes he will just take, for example, in the latest episode of Twin Peaks, the character of Big Ed, who was an important part, he was dating Norma, who runs the Double R.
Oh, yeah, he was in the last one, but...
Yeah, he turns up finally, but really to do nothing. You know,
yeah, he
speaks to Bobby Briggs, they go to another...
The most recent thing with him is that, yeah, he speaks to Bobby Briggs, but Norma, she originally was an independent business, but the Double R becomes a franchise, and she was arguing with the franchise owner.
Yeah, that's right.
That scene.
So, you know, that was all very strange. And then there's this weird shot of, you know, Big Ed alone at the station, at the convenient, the double gas farm. And he's just sitting there on his own, just kind of like, there's many of the characters. And there was the other weird shot in the new episode of the woman who is the Leland Palmer, his wife, played by Grace Zabriskie.
Oh, the one in the grocery store where she goes crazy.
Yeah, her. I mean, if the characters are portrayed as basically just waiting to die, they're just sitting there, you know, they've suffered some trauma or, you know, the major relationship of their life has ended and they're just waiting around to die.
And it kind of shows you the transformation of the town. I think we touched on this last time, but in the original Twin Peaks, it showed the town of Twin Peaks as this idealized small town. But the new Twin Peaks, it actually shows as more... as a place that's become more kind of a derelict. People are aging, people are dying, like more drug addiction. It also shows a more realistic aesthetic. The cinematography of the original just focused on the landmarks like the Great Northern, the Double R, the Roadhouse, the mountains. But the new one shows it more realistically, how it'll look if you were just to drive it down. Like it shows just like your regular gas stations and supermarkets in it. It portrays the town a lot differently, maybe more realistically.
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's a kind of... it certainly has not been mythologized as much as it was in the original show, the town town of Twin Peaks.
I mean, the original, it almost has a kind of a really romantic quality, like the idealized place that you'd want to take on like a summer road trip.
Yeah, and that's definitely changed, hasn't it? And... that's a definite change to the new show. There's this kind of loss of romanticism. And it seems to me there's a whole, and I think we mentioned this last podcast, there's an element of show. The fact that a lot of it doesn't take place in Twin Peaks, the fact that Del Cooper is missing, and not even himself, obviously, has become this kind of idiot savant. I mean, obviously, he's not Dougie Jones. He is Cooper, but he's in the body of Dougie Jones. He's almost comatose. Obviously, he can say...
a few things, and he does seem to stumble his way through life, what the life he's living.
The thing
at the
is,
moment.
You still don't know what happened with that big casino deal, how he got them their money back, the Mitchum brothers, and you don't know who the secret figure wants to kill him. I know that actor from Mulholland Drive is in it, but I forget his name.
But he's great. I think that guy who plays Mr. Todd. He was also in Mulholland Drive. He was the guy who felt there was something evil out the back behind the convenience store, and that it was the homeless man with the black face. Yeah, Mr. Todd almost plays the role, again, similar to the character in Mulholland Drive of the little dwarf who was in like this giant hotel in Las Vegas. Yeah. You know, who says, "This is the girl." You know, he's the guy who originally says that. Mr. Todd appears to play some kind of powerful gangster character. I'm not sure who he works for. He could work for Philip Jeffries, or I think he could work for Dal Cooper. I'm not sure.
What do you think about the transformation of Ben Horn? Towards the last episode, he goes crazy. With the original Twin Peaks series, he goes crazy towards the end, and he does that whole thing where he's generally reenacting the Civil War, and then he gets into like environmental philanthropy. And then he basically Ben Horn does like a turnaround, and he's just some kind of a mellow older guy.
Yeah, I think there are different characters in Twin Peaks that represent different elements of Lynch. I think that Ben Horn is a kind of womanizer. You know, he's always got these different women floating about. I think that's there's a bit of David Lynch in Ben Horn. You know, the kind of the wilder guy who wants to maybe go partying every now and then. You know, who goes across the border to Canada and. You know, has these kind of like, you know, secret bevy of prostitutes. You know, I think there's an element of that to Lynch as well. And that's probably the darker side of Lynch that we don't know so much about. Obviously, as he probably doesn't share that information with everybody. That'll just be my speculation. He appears, I think, like any older man, as someone who's mellowed a little bit. I think Benjamin Horn has become a good character in the new Twin Peaks. Obviously, his grandson, Richard Horn, who I want to start the Richard Horn fan club because he's completely evil. And he was actually in the when the Bad Cooper turns up to that hideout of those criminals. I don't know. I think it's meant to be in North Dakota. Richard Horn is there. And then, you know, obviously there's that great scene in the new episode where they have that arm wrestling contest. What did you make of that?
Oh, yeah, that was interesting because they're not expecting the doppelganger. They don't know he has these powers.
As I said, the odd part of it is that it's so fragmented that it's not happening. A lot of it is not happening in Twin Peaks. The stuff that is not happening in Twin Peaks, you even wonder why is that happening. The element of fragmentation in the new Twin Peaks thing that he's deliberately saying that, you know, America is deeply fragmented, which it is, obviously. I don't know. I'm not sure where he's going with it, though. And with only 6 hours left to go, or 5 or 6 hours left to go, you know, there's only a limited amount that he can bring this all together. But, you know, I mean, look, he's a pretty amazing filmmaker. If he does want to bring it all together, I guess he will. Maybe he doesn't want to bring it all together. Maybe he will leave it deliberately open-ended and fragmented. I'm not sure if he's pushing for a season 4. That's the thing. I think that's a very interesting question to ask at this stage. Is David?
Yeah, I think he could just do a kind of a mysterious ending, so then it's optional. That gives him the leeway. But, yeah, Lynch, it's almost like a cliché. Not all of his films, I think. Obviously, Blue Velvet has a pretty clear ending. You find out what happens. But Mulholland Drive is more dealing with the themes of like the subconscious, what is real and what is not. So the ending, basically in Mulholland Drive, you find out that that she's just living this dream world. But the plot, there's not really, I wouldn't say that the plot has a very clear ending. And well, it's possible it could have. I think Twin Peaks could end up having like a Mulholland Drive like ending.
If you look at the original Twin Peaks, every season has ended in an open ended way. You know, I mean, the two seasons ended with great mysteries. So,
season ended with Cooper in the Black Lodge. I mean, that was and then that continued, but that kept the audience. You got a significant amount of information, but it still left a lot of secrets that the audience was still asking about. I think season will probably end in the same way, or even more mysterious.
You should know that David Lynch loves mystery, and he loves
open-ended questions, and he loves, like, gee, what's going to happen next? And, gee, what does all that mean? So, I mean, I think that, you know, it would probably be in character for him not to tie everything up, and that we are going to be left with an open-ended season three, you know, like, with a lot of unanswered questions. So, I don't know. Yeah, I think, though, given his nature, I think we could probably expect that. So, you know, it's a very interesting time right now. As I said, I'm not uncritical of the new show. I think there are some problems with it. I mean, some episodes have felt very light on. Not the latest episode that just aired, but the one before, one where, Cheryl and...
Oh, Ben's where they the one that reopens the Blue Rose case, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff with Gordon Cole, and I don't know. I didn't really like that episode at all.
Which part of it did you not? The part with Gordon Cole?
Yeah,
I think is crucial because that's when Gordon Cole opens up the reinvestigation. That's absolutely crucial.
His egoism to a certain extent that essentially his character has taken on. I mean, originally when Gordon Cole was in it, it was almost an in-joke. You know, obviously it's David Lynch, la la la, and he's playing a character like an older Cooper. Obviously,
it's ironic that when he was younger, he played this kind of a corny older character, and now that he's significantly older, he's made himself to be more cool.
Yeah, now he's like, now Gordon Cole is this guy womanizing, you know, French actresses, you know, and like, you know, it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit suspicious and a bit dodgy. And his character has become the character of Cooper. He's become like the main investigative force. Him and Albert Rosenfeld are going around, which is a great character, by the way. I love Agent Rosenfeld. I love his sarcastic wit. I mean, he's one of my favorite
characters. Yeah, he has that great deadpan humor. And I noticed they made him, but he's become more likable because you remember in the very beginning, Rosenfeld comes into the town and he has most disgust for it.
Yeah, he's great. And he's the only Jewish character in the whole show. I think he's hilarious. And, you know, it's just, his humor is great. And obviously he's deeply involved in the Blue Rose case. And I think his presence has been one of the major really good things about the new show. And obviously the actor has passed on. So if there is going to be a season four, I'm not sure if there'll be a season four. I haven't really heard rumors or much talk about it. I guess maybe if this show was a huge success, it was something that could be considered. But I mean, I think ratings-wise, the show has not done particularly well, but it's been downloaded very well. Obviously, I think the world has been watching it. Everyone I speak to has been watching it. So, you know, I think it's a fascinating fascinating thing, season three. It's full of surprises, and I think that the last 6 hours are where the major surprises are going to lie. Is there anything else we want to say on all this?
What do you think about the character Diane, who was a... She worked with Cooper way back, and now she's being re-deputized. But at first, she was extremely hesitant.
Oh, I thought that... what's the name of the actress who plays her again? From Inland Empire, Laura Dern. I thought that she would end up playing Diane, and she did. And I was really excited for that. I thought this could be really interesting. But I don't like the character of Diane, I got to admit it. She's a bitch. She just drinks and smokes, and she hates everybody. And, you know, it's like, what the fuck is up with that? Like, why have this character? Diane seemed to be somebody who would be nice. She's like, Diane, I'm now entering the town of Twin Peaks. You must remind me. Blah, blah, blah. She was clearly someone that Cooper was in love with. And also, it seems that the character of Diane is working with the bad Cooper. So I don't know. Maybe Diane is not aware.
Oh, so is she... She was not in the original series. She was just referenced.
She was. Obviously, the actress wasn't, but the character was. She was always off screen. The original character of Val Cooper was always talking to a woman called Diane on his like little.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. She was referenced, but they didn't show her.
Correct. And we always thought, well, maybe one day we'll see who Diane is. And I guess with the new show we have, it's Laura Dern. I think that's an interesting choice. It's great, but I expected Diane to be a kind of, a nice person who was very much a go-getter and very much an assistant to Dal Cooper, but, you know, she appears to be an alcoholic, you know, smoking and drinking bitch, and who's now working for the evil version of Dal Cooper. I don't know, maybe there's a bit of backstory that we've missed there that explains why she is the way she is now, but I don't really like the new character of Diane, and I don't really like Laura Dern's performance, to be honest. I don't like the short hair on Laura Dern either, so...
Well, but she doesn't have to be likable. I think that's fine, I have a character like that.
Yeah, sure. Okay, you know, exactly. I'm just saying I don't like the character. I don't like. I mean, I don't hate it. I think it's interesting, possibly, but it certainly hasn't been a character that's resonated with me or has been exciting in any way.
What do you think about David Duchovny's character, who was a DEA agent as a transgender character? David Duchovny, that was actually towards the beginning of the series.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was in season 2 of Twin Peaks as a transgender, and he's one of the first transgender characters to be on American television. David Lynch did put a transgender character in Twin Peaks, but he was never in it much, and he's only been in one scene in this. I think we're only going to see him for one scene. It's just an add-on, an addition. I have no problem with it. I personally don't like the whole transgender mania that's going on at the moment, but it certainly is not that present in Twin Peaks. It's only present as a cameo. I think the fact that they were one of the first shows to show a character like that is fine. I don't like the transgender meme and all that bullshit that's going on in culture at the moment. And, you know, but I have no problem with that one character. And I think it's funny that David Duchovny, who's quite a notorious womanizer in Hollywood, who's slept with, you know, probably half of fucking Hollywood, is playing a character like that. I think that's amusing. And has, you know, kind of has a certain last to it. And obviously he's the guy from Californication, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's interesting, but yeah, I don't think we're going to see that character again.
What do you think about the relationship between Nadine and Dr. Jacoby, who's become this like Alex Jones-like persona?
You know, I like that. I like that a lot. My girlfriend Kristen doesn't like that character at all. We were watching a new episode last night. I watched the new episode twice. I tend to watch the new episode twice, obviously, because I anticipate doing these podcasts with you later down the line, but she doesn't like that character. She doesn't like the Nadine character, but I think it's funny. I like that scene outside of the silent drape running company, which shows that she did go on to make a company where the drapes run silent. And then there's this weird kind of, what are you doing? Kind of, you know, Alex Jones. But yeah, I think that's great that he references that. David Lynch has released a few videos where he questions, 9/11, and where he thinks it's an inside job. You know, I think that David Lynch has a conspiracy, side to himself. He doesn't share too often, but he's definitely a 9/11 truther, as far as I know. And, you know, all this reference to them and this kind of, you know, global elite, you know, that's been said in the new show. This is all a reference to the Jews and people like this, you know, which obviously he couldn't say because if he did, that would be the end of Twin Peaks forever. But, you know, this is a definite reference to the, you know, the international Jewish conspiracy and everything. So I think that's hilarious and funny that he's been daring enough to even put it in there, even if it's hidden, you know what I mean, under the guise of words like globalist and all those other ones that we use.
And it's going to be interesting to see if there's some kind of secret, like who are these secretive forces, the one who tried to order the assassination of Dougie Jones and who is sort of, and they're probably also behind the release of the doppelganger, and they're going to have some kind of involvement with the investigation of the Blue Rose case. So there is definitely this secretive force that's not revealed.
Yeah, I do think that another element of, you know, when he talks about them or they is the deep state. That there is an element, and I think it's quite timely that David Lynch is portraying this because there's clearly something that is also threatening Donald Trump, that there are elements of the CIA and the FBI that are almost, you know, off the books or secretive at a certain level, so that some of them could even be traitors to the United States. So that there seems to be elements of that. The character Philip Jeffries appears to be somebody who's investigating the Blue Rose case and appears to be off the books. So yeah, I think that there's an element of this kind of conspiratorial deep stateness to the new Twin Peaks that's interesting and timely as well. You know, that's the amazing thing about David Lynch, even though he's obviously an older man who hails from the kind of era of the 50s and 60s when he grew up. There's a definite relevance to the kind of things he discusses, and his work to this day remains something that is fascinating and challenging to us all, I think. And even if we occasionally may have our problems with various elements of it, he's certainly still one of the most interesting and challenging filmmakers in the world. And, you know, I'm very excited to see the final 6 hours of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and this very well could probably be his last piece of work. I think he said he does not plan to make any more films in the future after this, but David Lynch is always unpredictable.
David Lynch is always saying he's not going to do this. Basically, David Lynch is a man of mystery who will do what he does when inspiration hits. I have no idea what he'll do. Obviously, he's an older man now who's smoked, chain smoked all his life. You know, he may fall ill. So it could be his last major work. Or who knows, maybe he lives another 10 years, does another season of Twin Peaks and makes a couple more features. I would say that if he does live another 10 years, we're going to see more work from David Lynch. That's just the kind of person he is. He's a troublemaker, and, you know, I like that about him. I've always been down with his sensibility, and, you know, people have criticized him. I've responded to his criticism, but I don't really give a shit about people criticizing him. He's a major genius of our age, and if he's, you know, run around and done a few things with women, good luck to him, you know, half his luck, all right?
Was David Lynch an influence on any of your work, any of your films?
Absolutely. He's probably been one of the major influences. David Lynch was an influence on Pearls Before Swine, The Beautiful and Damned, definitely the new film I did called The Second Coming, Volume 1 and 2.
And when's that going to be released, Volume 2?
Volume 1, as I said, is online. I placed it online for free. Volume 2 is being finished right now. It will be finished very soon. I'm going to play it at this year's Melbourne Underground Film Festival. It'll probably play a few more other indie festivals, but then I'm going to put it online probably for a while and then get the DVD release out. So that was very much influenced by Inland Empire, very much influenced by Inland Empire. It's almost me doing a version of Inland Empire. So, you know, it's now a 3-hour kind of epic project shot on video, like, you know, on like a lo-fi video camera. So it's very much without a script. So it's very much inspired by Inland Empire. So there you go.
And with your film Pearls Before Swine, it deals with the soul as secret of a force. Was that influenced by a specific, like the scene in the end where Boyd Rice is taken away in that plane and there's that sense of mystery? That's definitely Lynchian.
Yeah. And there was. And I also, when I made that film, you know, I believed that there was going to be a new kind of, you know, far right kind of group that was going to attempt to retake Western civilization from the powers that be, that were obviously behind the scenes and that were secretly controlling Western society. I realized at some stage there would be an attempt to foil that. And I think with the alt-right, with Donald Trump, with Brexit, with other far-right populists like Marine Le Pen and various other far-right groups, you know, like some of these people in the EU, in Hungary, in Poland, who don't wish to take migrants, that there was going to be a strong reaction to this. And that I wanted to make a film about how this would rise and that there would be a kind of international conspiracy that would attempt to fight this. And I think that's what I was trying to portray. I don't think David Lynch has been that outright apropos of politics. I mean, I think he would probably be supportive of some aspect of what we call globalization.
The interesting about Lynch's politics is he supported Bernie Sanders, but when it came to Trump versus Hillary, he was silent.
Yeah. I think he would have been a Trump man in relation to the choice of the two. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, if he'd come out in support of Donald Trump, he probably would not have got the show up. So, you know, I mean, it's that serious in Hollywood if you are a vocal supporter of Donald Trump. I mean, because of the ownership of U.S. media, there are large parts of the community that are anti-Trump. And it seems very sad because it seems that Donald Trump is a legitimate friend of Israel. Almost far more than Obama was. So I'm not entirely sure why the Jewish community is not more supportive of him. And look, you know, I think that the globalist world conspiracy is self-destructive, but the people it will hurt most is the globalists themselves. And this ties into what Martin Heidegger said about the Holocaust, when he said that the Jews destroyed themselves, that they established a kind of world that would eventually, a kind of worldview that would eventually come after themselves and eventually lead to their own destruction. And I do think that's the same now.
Yes, continuing on that, it's I talked to Josh Snyder, like if you're familiar with him, like he did a show with us. He was talking about like how in Israel, like feminism has gone so bad. Well, feminism's another thing that like that many Jews have pushed over here, you know, to destroy the nuclear family, as you were talking about, and it's destroying like the nuclear family in Israel with
exactly. They hurt themselves. They don't realize. And that, you know, they don't realize that someone like Donald Trump is their best friend, that he would be a legitimate friend to Israel and the Jewish people. And that actually the far right now, at least the elements that don't, that aren't 1488, 1488 is still a bit nuts, but that, like, you know, there are ways that, to talk to the Jewish community without it, without killing them all, taking them off the death camp. There are ways to convince them to change from the path that they're on to something that's not so destructive for everybody. And I think this is what the kind of conversation that's going on behind the scenes with Donald Trump and people like this. And I think this is an important conversation to have, because we can take Western civilization off the road to destruction that it's on and head it towards a kind of more nationalist and more traditionalist kind of viewpoint that will be great for everybody, including the Jewish community.
Since we're got onto the topic of Donald Trump is proposing this immigration bill with a point system modeled after Australia's. Living in Australia, do you see Australia as having a good system to emulate?
Well, let me just say, okay, we have the greatest immigration system. Well, not maybe the greatest. We have stopped all the boats, so all illegal immigrants have stopped coming into this country. We do allow in a certain amount of legal immigrants, and that they could be, that number could be reduced. Obviously, I'm somebody who opposes basically all immigration to Western civilization from non-Western countries. So I would ban all Asian and Arab and African immigration to the West altogether. And I think that should be the overall aim of the alt-right, to promote that kind of worldview. And it should also be of the general right, conservative right. I think we've had enough of immigration. I think we can allow immigration from like Eastern Europe and Russia to other parts of the West. I think that's but basically we need to maintain a European presence. I do consider Israel to be part of Western civilization. I have my critique of Israel, but like I'm not against it. I stand with it. I'm not an anti-Zionist, and I don't support the Palestinian community. I don't give the slightest fuck about the Palestinians, to be honest. And if the Jews wanted to completely get rid of the Palestinians, I wouldn't give a shit. So there, this is my controversial opinions on a few different things there. That's just, and I do think in relation to health, that Bernie Sanders, interestingly, put up a video where Donald Trump praised the Australian healthcare system. And actually, Bernie Sanders is quite right. The healthcare system in Australia is one of the world's best. And if Americans were to have our system, they would be very lucky. And the actual health system in Australia saved my life. I was running nightclubs in the 1990s, and I came down with a liver abscess, which is kind of like a kind of pus forms in your liver. And I didn't have a healthcare. So I used the public health system, and basically I was going to die if I didn't have this operated on. And they took me to hospital under the public system. They operated, they drained my liver, and the liver is the one part of the body that repairs itself. So my liver has fully repaired itself, but basically the public health system saved my life. So I'm never going to criticize it, and I highly recommend it. It's a system that could easily...
How is it different than the British and Canadian system?
Well, it is better. It's very much similar to the kind of system they have there. As it's funded by the government, you don't have to pay anything. And that certain elements of like things like medication are subsidized if you have the Medicare card. But basically, it's free. It's a free public. It's universal healthcare, and it's brilliant. Let me tell you. And I'm deeply surprised that it's not in a country like America that has such vast wealth, where you have, it's not even libertarian economics. Like the American rich, the wealthy elite, has stolen so much money from the American people, resources. It's just extraordinary. The fact that, whatever it would take to create universal health care, which would be not that much compared to, say, I don't know, with these recent, wars for the Jews in the Middle East, all these fucking hideous wars. Iran, Iraq, they haven't attacked Iran yet, but Iraq, Syria, Libya, all these wars. I mean, they cost, what, $5 trillion? I mean, you could have easily have had a universal health care in America for a lot less than that. So, I think it's something they need to do, and it's very important that they get onto it, I think. And I totally agree with Bernie Sanders, and I'm not down with, this kind of libertarian economics to say, we can't afford it. You can definitely afford it. You just got to take the money from the elite. I mean, they have trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions. If you would actually access some of the Rothschilds' money that's sitting offshore in Switzerland, you would have, you could do anything. You could have free universities, free healthcare. Everything Bernie wants to do could be funded if they access the money that the elite have. It's quite simple. You don't have to overtax the working class.
They don't have to be taxed at all. They're the people you're out to help. So there it is. That's my vaguely national socialist view on all that.
With the Twin Peaks, do you think there is like an idealized type of society that David Lynch wants to portray in his other films as well?
I do think the original show was very much strong on that, and that there are elements of that. Obviously, Twin Peaks represents a kind of, you know, place of goodness, even though they're evil characters. It seems to be the young people of Twin Peaks are the ones who are involved, you know, who are naive and they're up to no good. You know, Richard Horne and that daughter of Shelley, they're kind of like, you know, getting up to no good. But I do think that Twin Peaks represents a kind of goodness, even in the new show. Yes, and it represents to return to more traditional values, to a time of the traditional family, the traditional society, where people respected each other, where people were polite, where there was no crime. You know, you never see you know, black communities portrayed in David Lynch shows. You know, you never see how the cities of America have been destroyed by the African-American, poor African-American population. You know, this is a great tragedy, I think, to America. I think David Lynch is aware of it. He never even portrays it. Occasionally, the odd character, black character, turns up, but they're always a part of white society. They're always part of a more civilized white world that still is suffice in America, obviously. But the way that American cities are destroyed by African Americans is never portrayed. Obviously, it's something that would be disturbing to him, as it's disturbing to anybody.
Yeah, well, he does deal a lot with crime mysteries in his film.
He does, but it never involves ethnic communities, really. It always involves kind of white-on-white crime.
The French-Canadian community is the organized crime in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, well, the French, you know, the Canadians are notorious criminals, you know.
One thing that's interesting about the Ben Horne character is he has this shady side to him in the beginning. But if you look at, like, businessmen, he's also connected to the community. Like, he hires the local people, and he has a strong rapport with them. He's not like your modern-day businessman, American businessman today.
Benjamin Horne, yeah. I mean, look, I've always been a fan of Ben Horne. I mean, I do think society needs a certain level of criminals. I do think that criminals bring jobs. Criminals create opportunities. You know, I have never, you know, I mean, I worked in the nightclub industry. There are a number of people who owned the nightclubs, some of the venues I worked at. They were clearly involved in organized crime. And they employed hundreds of people, and I don't see there's necessarily anything wrong with that. You know, I think this is the difference between a gangster and, say, someone like Donald Trump when he was an entrepreneur. Not that much.
Would you make the case that Ben Horne's like a small-scale Donald Trump?
I would make a case that he is, yeah. I think that's a very interesting observation, Robert. Very astute of you to pick that up. And I think that you know, his grandson, Richard Horne, is probably Donald Jr. Huh. You know, he's running around.
There's even a slight resemblance.
There is a bit. You know, I love Richard Horne. Look, you know, I mean, I thought it's interesting. It's all interesting network. And look, we've got more to discuss, haven't we? Let's wrap it up here. Hey, Robert, because we've got more to discuss. We'll do our part three when the show wraps in about 6 weeks. But look, this is great. I mean, I really enjoy talking about Twin Peaks with you, and I think it's very interesting. So it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Richard Wollstonecraft, and also thanks, Sam Kevorkian.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Robert.